The grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast on the Diamantina Podcast Network. Two sleeps we've waited all summer long, and by all summer I mean 3 days in, 4 days in, but two more sleeps until the first test match, Australia v India at the Adelaide Oval. There's so much happening in this week's, I mean, it's like literally it's the start of the summer, I'm feeling alive. Also because Jared Waitley and Michael Clarke have just had the biggest feud, which is just right in our wheelhouse. Mm. And so we thought, well, let's just get him on the show. I mean, not Michael Clarke on the show. No. We have to get Jared Waitley on the show. He is on the show. Mm-hmm. We're also speaking to Alyssa Healy, who's just won a World Cup. Mm. This is amazing. So many amazing things happening. Also, Matt Renshaw hit 345 in a grade game, so we need to immediately investigate what's happening in the grade scene in Brisbane for that to be an actual thing that could have happened.
Yes.
What else is happening? Oh, yeah. You got like a day left before you can buy a ticket to our live show. I should be saying, if I could use my words properly, you know where to get them. Tickets are selling fast. It's going to be awesome. We are pumped.
Nearly gone.
Perfect.
Can we say that? Is that a bluff?
Getting quick.
Yes. Pretending we do showbiz now.
Yeah, there's 8,000 tickets left. Also, what's happening in our lives? Well, we're about to do our first TV show in about 3, 5, 6 hours time. I don't know what time it is. Anyway. There's a lot happening because the summer's finally here. My name's Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry. And over there's Dave Edwards. Boys, welcome.
What a whirlwind intro.
Oh,
that was from
your
you guys.
Eyes. The glint in your eyes is maniacal. And I'm frightened.
You know, the straight into Channel 7 Matters, you know, their whole tagline was "Hold on, I'm coming." Which was obviously an overt sexual reference of orgasming, which is probably
good marketing.
Inappropriate. Yeah. But like, do you think it's true? Like, do you think the majority, you know, we're three men with Foxtel subscriptions, like, we've been watching cricket for a couple of weeks. You think most people, though, are like, thank fuck, the cricket is here. There's been so much, like, you know, chat about rubbish, and now we can actually play some cricket. Is that the view of the body politic?
It kind of reminds me of the North Sydney Bears club song. The North Sydney Bears are coming. The North Sydney Bears are here. Cricket's already been here for a while, lads. And that is the strangest club song going around.
Well, cricket is in Australia. It's like round 15 at the moment. And like everyone's been engaged in the cricket, but it hasn't been on free-to-air television. And if you could read social media, which is some of the things I like to do when I like to engage the experts, and it's just like, it's okay. Hold on. I'm coming. You know?
Just hold on.
Yeah. So the cricket's starting, as I'm saying, 2 days' time. You guys excited for the first test?
I'm immensely excited. I guess this is what happens when there's just a lead in. There's a bit of trash talk. We'll talk about Virat Kohli because that's what you've got to do now in Australia at all costs and all times. There's been some tour matches as well. But yeah, we're just going to actually see what is going on between both teams. I still hold that Australia, are deserved favourites because it's really hard to beat us here. Though there are many other people out there in, the cricket landscape. Pretty keen to tell us that we struggle and we have no runs and that India are actually a very good side. It's probably true as well.
I hear that they're good. And I've heard Kohli do a couple of interviews and he just sounds really switched on, focused, like autistically focused on defeating Australia. He's been here for a few weeks now as well. He's acclimatized to the conditions, to the media, and I'm genuinely frightened of his performance in Adelaide.
I don't know about you guys, but I can't remember a time when a visiting batsman has come out here and it's just accepted that he's going to score runs. I mean, even when like Lara, Tendulkar, Daryl Tuffey, you know, some of the great batsmen, Alan Mulally, you know, just coming out here. And it was just expected that like people are saying, you know, Virat Kohli's going to score a couple of hundreds. I heard Dirk Nanas the other day and he was saying like, you know, there's going to be times where, you know, we just can't get him out. That is so defeatist and I've never heard an Australian, the Australian public saying like, well, he's just going to score hundreds.
It's really troubling, isn't it?
Yes.
The way that we've already kind of surrendered to his greatness before the match has even started.
I want to know what happened to the old days. We're just like, we're going to attack the captain.
Yeah.
Cut him off at the head.
Look, there has been those gleaming eyes. He goes, goodness me. There have been some comments from, from some past players, some new colleagues of ours, Ricky Ponting and Jason Gillespie.
Best mates, some would say. Not friends of the show.
Ponting overnight has come out and said, well, it's going to take tactics and actions to get Virat Kohli out.
Really? Like, really?
Great call.
That's strange.
Jeez, Ricky.
I wouldn't have thought that.
Gillespie said they need to bowl a fourth stump line where the occasional one doesn't move away. So just unerring 100% accuracy with slight variation
just
on occasion.
At speed.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's all we have to do. Mm. I remember I'm thinking Michael Vaughan had a great summer out here. Alistair Cook as well, just to put it into the England sphere. Mm. And the plan was now we'll just get the captain out and the rest will fall. Mm. It's just like...
What's military strategy?
That's right.
And there's no greater
first
metaphor.
Secure victory than fight if you must. Mm. Sun Tzu.
Mm. But is this like manifest, us seeing the softening of the Australian cricketing public and team specifically, and just like, well, they've got a very good player. He's going to score some runs, and that's okay. But it's not okay. How are we supposed to win games of cricket if Kohli's going to score 800?
That's a good point.
Well, it depends how you define, what the ultimate goal is for Australia. If the goal is to win games of cricket,
yes,
then we should do whatever it takes, mm-hmm. Art of war style. But if the plan is to win back and curry favour with the public... Mm. Maybe winning games of cricket not so important.
Well, I'm going to ask Jared Waitley that question, is a good summer?
A bit quippier than that.
I'll make it quippier than that, obviously, when he comes on the show a little bit later. Pez, the CA11 had a trial game against India, probably the other way around, because the CA11 weren't trialing for anything, a practice match. So India, did you see Trent Copeland's tweet to us that we retweeted from our account? Did you see that?
God, we're getting so self-referential on this show. It's good, though. It's a trope of showbiz. But, I saw it. It was one of these classic tour matches now, classic in the sense that, there's barely any deep-seated competition attached to it, almost deliberately created so as to leave the visiting side underdone. It actually is a bit of a farce that the touring side doesn't get to have a really good preparation. Same goes when Australia goes overseas as well. But what happened? India sort of scored a few runs and then the Caxi side made 500 or something like that. Mm. Kohli started bowling, was giggling when he was getting wickets. Mm, Bumrah came on at the end and blew up deluxe when he got somebody out after five balls. Mm. All in a good day's, tour match, I guess.
Mm. Well, let me put it to you, Eddos, Ed Cowan, friend of the show, has said that when we go
drag that out, don't we?
When we go, the three of us go over to India and we play, there's a guy with a machine gun guarding the Indian practices wicket, and those nets that the Indians use are just raging turners.
Yep.
And then they put the Australians on these absolute batting paradises, bit of grass, and nice speed and carry. And I feel like that's the equivalent that this Australian, teams come out here, we give them the Caxi 11, and they just score 500. Remember, New Zealand's come out here, and Finch and who opened the batting? Oh, it was Ryan.
Who are you talking about?
Batting for
Seacrest.
Ryan.
Oh, Carters.
Carters. Thank you, Jesus. Scored 500 up in the batting. Ryan Seacrest and Aaron Finch opened the batting, scored 500 at Blacktown. Yep. Same thing.
Yeah.
So, what's the point of these trial games? Is my long winded point.
Yeah.
Well, I guess contractual obligations play a part there. Mm. A game needs to take place. It doesn't really matter who the opposition is. The Caxi 11, who was in that team? Is there any kind of talent that we need to look out for? Or is it mildly unforgettable?
Darcy Short was captain. There was a couple of guys who were kind of on their way through. I noted and
who got Kohli out?
Yeah. I was just about to speak about this. So I've forgotten his name already, which I guess is part of the problem. But Ben Horn from the Daily Telegraph. Oh, no, it wasn't Ben Horn. Pardon me, Ben, if you are listening out there. Tom Decent, actually, from the Sydney Morning Herald, tweeted that some sort of part-time trundler had just got Kohli out, which I thought was a tad harsh, given that he just dismissed the world's greatest batsman. But he still managed to sort of crowbar in there a little bit of a sledge. Because, Tom, like us, is an Australian male, and that's how we speak about people.
And the Australian media has been at great pains to subvert and alpha the Indian team from as soon as they touched down. And we've seen that, particularly in the News Corp publications.
Yeah. There was a headline the other day saying, scaredy bats.
What a play on words.
Absolute play on words. And it wouldn't fire the Indians up at all, would it? It would, it definitely would have nothing other than a purely negative effect on them.
It's one of the worst things I've ever heard, scaredy bats.
Scaredy bats.
If one of you tweeted that from our account, I would...
We've already done it, mate.
I've done it. Oh, cool. Oh, perfect.
Delete the account.
In the great cricketing realms, there was a couple of notable performances in the Brisbane grade scene. Matt Renshaw scored the 6th or 7th highest ever score by an individual batsman. He scored 345 Interesting as well, Marcus Labuschagne also scored 185 and took 5 wickets with the balls on the same game. Quite a good game. Hopefully for him, the team lost, because that would be the ultimate. He would never play again.
Yeah.
Matt Renshaw, 345. Does this mean anything? Does it mean anything?
You're worried. You sort of feel sorry for the opposition, don't you, really? Yes. Who's hungover? Who's trying to get out of the house and just enjoy a day with their mates? And then, you know, I noticed the worst thing about it was that, like, Renshaw was, like, unapologetically humble on Instagram afterwards, saying, you know, I just wanted to give it a right clonk. My first issue is, like, what the hell is clonk? I've never heard. Like,
is that Pat evolution? Talked about sniffs and we didn't know what that meant.
Yeah, that's right. It's definitely a sign of our aging, but I've just never heard the term clonk before. Is it not tonk?
Clonk sounds like when you don't quite get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit clonk. It's a bit clonky.
Yeah. So maybe that is what he was saying.
He scored 345.
Yeah, and didn't hit one out of the middle.
Yeah. Oh, no, I was actually trying to not get them out of the middle. Tried to give it a right clonk as opposed to a tonk,
and then I raised my bat 6 times.
If you're a bowler and you're bowling to Matt Renshaw, who's clearly going to play probably 110 Test matches, because he's only 15 still.
True.
So
you just made the rep side.
That would be so demoralising, wouldn't it? I'm just thinking of the bowlers now. I mean, you know, good on Matt for scoring 345 in a great game.
Yeah, good on you, mate.
It's not going to get him a test cap.
No.
Exactly. It almost, like, I wonder if it serves to undermine his chances, in the sense that, like, now all of the news articles about him are about him playing grade cricket and succeeding. Like, it's there's still this undertone, sadly, that, like, it's you know, he's struggling if he's even there at all.
Well, if, you know, Brad Hodges' interview last week is anything to go by, you know, he's going to hit 300 this week, and then he's going to be advised that he has to hit another 300, in order to maybe play in the test team.
Well, a lot of feedback on the Hodge interview. More than I've ever seen before. Unprecedented level of feedback.
Was that a Victorian thing?
Well, yeah, like you literally line up, like, in order: Jason Gillespie, Steve Waugh, Tim Payne, Adam Gilchrist, Kevin Roberts. And Brad Hodge overtakes them for listens in 3 days.
I think it's because he said fuck a lot.
Yeah. People like the swear words. Yeah. He literally, 4 seconds before he came there, right, are we right to swear? Yes, fucking great.
Yeah.
Just straight away.
He was really keen to swear.
But he was funny, to be fair, and we appreciate that feedback.
We did say at the end of the day to him, oh, we'll send the show to you, and he sort of looked at us like he'd never met us before. So. Who are you?
This is a show? Yeah, what am I doing
Which
here?
Was part of the charm, I guess.
Obviously, we've also done some promo work with Channel 7 last week. That was in the building, and Brad Hodge just ripped us, and it was really funny. So, you know, those are also filtering through social media at the same time. Anything else we're just talking about? Well, the WBBL kicked off this week. Some stand-up performances. It doesn't seem like cheating that the Sydney Sixers have both Alyssa Healy and Elise Perry.
Well, that was the thinking as you sort of tuned in to, like, it was Channel 7's first broadcast on Saturday morning there down at Junction
How
Oval.
How clean were the graphics?
Yeah, really clean.
There's no fucking cricket on TV.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Down at Junction Oval, beautiful day, and the Sydney Sixers and the Melbourne Stars played, I believe, the second match, and Healy and Perry opened the batting for the Sixers, who, like, who were slated by many experts to go the entire competition without losing a game. Yep. The Stars, on the other hand, to not win a game. So weak did they seem to the experts.
Match fixing. It's the only thing we can. Yeah,
that's the only conclusion.
What was the betting turnover?
Well,
on
it was.
That match?
I mean, sorry, Perry.
Seriously, what was the betting turnover on that match?
I don't have it in front of me for you, David, but Perry and Healy put on 110 off, like, 11 overs to kick things off, and it looked extremely ominous for the Stars. And then I sort of had 8 beers with a mate, and the next thing I know, the Stars had won with, like, 16 balls to spare. So fixing, I'd suppose, or a really good innings from Lazelle Lee, the South African, 150 rocks, bringing up the ton with a 6 as well.
Imports
huge 6.
Hitting hundreds on our shores.
A couple of imports in WBBL.
Yeah.
We're going to catch up with Alyssa Healy about all of that pretty soon.
Jared Whateley up next, and after that, Alyssa Healy.
Boys, very excited to have this next guest on. He's a legendary sports broadcaster in Australia. He's been particularly prominent in the last week or so, involved in one of the great alpha stouches that we absolutely have to comment on here in the Grade Cricketer, but also just one of the most prominent broadcasters Australia knows. I'm, of course, talking about Jared Whateley. Jared, welcome to the Grade Cricketer.
So Sam, Dave, Ian, now this is a format that I'm absolutely sure I'm unworthy of.
Oh, a couple of minutes more, it's great. Yes.
I mean, Jared, everyone remembers where they were now when they... I mean, let's just get straight into it, sorry. Yeah. He's at Undignified. Yep. Everyone remembers where they were when Michael Clark's missive was sent over the internet.
Screenshot.
Yeah, the screenshot as well, referring to you as Gerald Wheatley. Like, I had to compose myself for a good couple of hours just trying to contemplate the sheer alphadom of what he tried to do. Can you just take us, you know, right into the mind and the soul of the recipient, you know, of this alpha power play, you know, for the benefit of our listeners?
And also where you were when you saw it.
Right. So I was in the kitchen just finishing cooking dinner and got a text saying, have you seen this? And no, I hadn't seen that. So is your phrase the apex of alpha cricketing life? Probably flashed through my mind at that stage. But I, when you end up in these things, I probably think it's unedifying. And so that's how I've sort of come away from it for the week, going, got to try to do better than that.
Joe, I want to ask you, like, the sort of the one of the takeaways of it was, like, the how many tests have you played kind of line. And I wonder, like, if you've experienced that over the years, you know, just talking to former athletes who disagree with your own opinion. Do you come across that a lot?
Only every now and then these days. So that's I think, was a fairly common refrain for probably for some decades. And in the world of Aussie rules, I'm pretty sure that held sway for a while. But I think there's probably my experience over... I've probably been doing this a bit longer than I think, but that is those barriers have lowered. Is I think most people accept there's a place for the voice of those who haven't played to mix with those who have. And then I think you have to be a bit careful yourself with that. I don't think I put too many things across that require me having been out in the middle facing the first ball of a test match, because I have no reference point for that. But I have.
Well, you would have done that, but you didn't have the courage to do it, Jared.
I always thought it was an ability. So, yeah, I think that the way people consume sport, I think there's actually a craving for the cross section, and then you respect your place in that. So I think in my journalism career, that's what I've tried to do, but you're never perfect with these things.
Because I want to ask you, you know, now that you're on this podcast, how many grad games have you played?
A few. So I was, I played junior cricket with great enthusiasm. And I was a stodgy opening batsman. Then when I got older, I was still a stodgy opening batsman so I could go and knock the shine off the new ball, and then my teammates would start to call out to get out so they could make a chance to win. And I think there would be grade cricketers at Wheeler's Hill who'd be nodding their heads going, oh yeah, that was right, after about eight overs, get out!
Yes. Jared, we'll bring it back to the protagonist for a moment in Michael Clark. I mean, what is it about Pup? I mean, he's overseas at the moment. He's commentating for one of the Indian broadcasters. He's not here. He doesn't have a gig at home. Why do you think it is that we haven't quite embraced him post-career as we have two other former captains?
So I'm in no way going to intend to be critical here. He was a different captain. He was... In a way, he was a thoroughly new age captain. Mm. And I probably think for a period of time, people didn't know absolutely how to take him. Mm. He had a different demeanour and dynamic within the team. And that's just to read the biographies or the autobiographies of the players who played with him is to get a full understanding of that. So he was around celebrity, probably more so than cricketers had been. So I think, in a way, he was a thoroughly modern sportsman who crossed over into the paparazzi set, away from just the theatre of sport. So, yeah, I think there's that, and then everyone can sort of form their own views from there, and I'm not going to sort of delve much further than what I've said previously.
I'm keen, Jared, just to, I mean, once you sort of get past the sheer like power play from Clark, which is just one of the most classic displays we've ever seen in our life or likely to ever see, once you sort of get past that and look into the actual argument that was going back and forth, I thought it was very interesting. And I wanted to just query you, if I could, about one thing that you said around, you know, the Australia being reviled as a cricket team kind of dated back to Clark's time as captain. And I wanted to kind of put it to you that that it goes back further than that. You know, that the way that they behaved and their boorishness, you know, goes back almost generations before that. Like, why did you pitch it at Clark?
So I've always had this sort of the flex point, I think, in Australian cricket, and I've sort of long held this view and spoken about it, is essentially the choice of Clark and Cattich, of what Australian cricket might have chosen in that moment, and the path that it went down. So, and you can have your views as to what would have served cricket better or what would have served your own view of cricket better. So I actually think there's a clear flex point there. Mm. And if you run that along to say, I just think if you run that all the way through, it's not that there hadn't been moments in Australian cricket before, but I think that sense of international repulsion, which was given very strong voice in the aftermath of what happened in South Africa, I think you can trace that back, and it starts to build rather intensely from that moment. And I do think that is where the genesis of the language around the line comes in. Mm. Is I don't think you'll find the line in the Border years or the Taylor years. I don't think you'll find the line in the Steve Waugh years, and I don't believe you'll find it in the Ponting years either. I think the line was an invention of that time, and then we saw where that ended up running to. So that's the line. So yeah, it's the line that is that legacy piece for me.
It's super interesting. Like, it's to me feels like there's this kind of culture, it's almost culture war stuff, what's going on around the way Australians should play cricket, and a real arm wrestle around how we should do it. And I noted Clark saying, you know, sort of insinuating or inferring this idea that the boorishness or the hardness of playing cricket in this kind of, that brand was in our blood. And I just wanted to know, especially as a host of an SEN show as well, where you get to hear from a lot of listeners, like, how much do you think what he said there represents the views of the broader Australian kind of body politic, if you will? Yeah. Like, how many people think that this is actually how we should play, and it's only a matter of time before we get back to, you know, the old bad ways?
Yeah, well, I think there's a strong core. Now, trying to define that is difficult, but I think there's a very strong core of people who are happy with the no-holds-barred, whatever it takes, even ignoring the events of the past 9 months. But that's not I guess my point is that's not the luxury of Tim Payne and Justin Langer. They have been served with a moment in time where they have to change the Australian way, and it's actually not up for debate. Is the cost of what has happened, the fall of cricket in this country, the change to individuals' lives and careers, and I have felt desperately for Steve Smith during all of this. Australian cricket doesn't have the conceit to go, nah, we're going to ignore where we got to and just go back to the way we've always seen ourselves and conducted. And I do think it's a... So in some ways, I think it's a false bravado that's been put around it anyway. I think Australia's best cricket has been played in a hard-nosed way without being abusive and in your face. I don't think anyone's saying don't be competitive. But I guess the idea that... So Payne and Langer need our support, and they need a bit of time to find what the right level is. But the idea that they won't win squat playing like this, well, they heroically drew that test in Dubai playing like this. They lost in Abu Dhabi because technically they're not very good in, in the Middle East.
Skills.
And the one-day team hasn't been any good for 2 years, and we still haven't figured out how to play international T20. So spare me the we've lost our way because we're shaking hands before a game. A lot of these are inherent problems which the team has to work through on a skill front, and they need this test series needs to start desperately so that they can show the way that they want to play. And I just think it will be absent of the two or three moments across the series that made all of us go, oh, really? I actually think that will be the only change. We'll be entirely comfortable with it. And then Australia has to find its way towards successful cricket, which is not going to be easy when three of your preferred top six are not in the lineup.
Well, I mean, it's a good segue into the next question, Joe, because I want to ask you if you think it's more important for this team to sort of win the hearts and the minds back of the public than it is to actually win games of cricket or the series per se, or are those two mutually exclusive?
No, they're not mutually exclusive, and winning will be important. But equally, this strikes me as this is almost the footy team that enters rebuild mode, and you accept that there are days where they are going to get outplayed. But you look for the signs. You look for the signs individually. You look for the signs collectively. And you look for the growth and the possibilities. So part of me wishes that Will Pekowski had been able to stay in his cricket at the start of the Shield season, or Jason Sanger had come on just enough that one of the 20-year-olds could have come into the side and we could have gone, I can see what the next 15 years of Australian cricket is going to look like.
Yes.
But the team is not quite there yet, and that's okay. So we'll quibble over who plays, but if Marcus Harris went out on Thursday and made a century on debut, the nation will swell to his back. And equally, if that's what happens with Aaron Finch. So I actually think they're a team that we are desperate to be with, because we understand the hurts, we understand the desire for change. And this is where, you know, what made me angry was the idea, no, get back to the way it's always been done. No, no, let them find what they want to be and let us gravitate towards that. And I think that will actually be the story of the next 3 months.
Strong words, Jared, and, you know, far be it from us to take a side in this. Let me put it this way. I'm on Team Kadich. We really appreciate you joining the show. Thanks for your leadership on this as well. We look forward to listening to you throughout the summer. And, yeah, cheers for coming on The Great Cricketer.
I look forward to listening to you for the rest of the summer.
Just journos backslapping each other. Great stuff. Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it.
No worries at all.
Dave, here goes some numbers for you here.
Please.
One of the greats of the game we're about to talk to here. 61 ODIs, approaching 1,000 runs, a highest of 133 at a run a ball, nearly 100 T20I matches with a highest of 90, 850s in that format, 3 tests for Australia, which I presume is the max she could have possibly played, a gun keeper, and 140 dismissals across all international formats. She's probably the best batter in the world at the moment. There, I said it. Take that, Harmon Preet. Welcome to The Great Cricketer, Alyssa Healy. Alyssa, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're right.
Cop that Harmon Preet.
That's how I like it. Yeah. Well, we always start the same way, Alyssa, and obviously, you know, we're club mates at Balmain. You'd be well aware of my work there. What does grade cricket mean to you?
Well, it's everything. It's where everyone starts. So it's, you know, it's the pinnacle for a lot of players around the country, unfortunately. But for us that have played the top level, it's where we all started, and it's the best place to play.
You're obviously, you know, a stalwart of Balmain. Again, just, you know, calling out that you know, I did some work there as well. But I just, my first question to you, really, like, we've got so many listeners here, actually, ashamedly, like, probably about at least 90-plus male or percent male audience. We just want to know, like, are the tropes of grade cricket the same in the women's game? You know, like, do you go back and stand behind the bowlers with arms crossed when you're, you know, not training? Do you look over lower graders' shoulders when you're talking to them? You know, do you bat when you want? Do you wear state kit to training? Can you just give us a bit of an insight?
Yeah, well, no state kid at training, please. A lot of the young kids tend to do that these days, but that was such a big no-no in our time. That was very much frowned upon. But I think the women's game, it's like pretty much as soon as you're over 25, you just don't go to training. So a little bit different to the men's game. I think all the 40-plus-year-olds go to training to get away from their partners, but once you get over 25, you don't come. So slightly different, but the same sort of things happen. You just... stand there, don't do anything, and just call out the young kids for bowling no ball.
That's good. So overstepping is just as rampant in the nets in the women's game as it is in the men's game. That is comforting news, Alyssa.
Yep.
Just to
rife throughout the women's game, let me tell you.
Just to move away from grade for a moment to school cricket. So a lot of people probably know this already, but you were the first female student to be selected for Barker's first 11. Barker's a school here in Sydney. Historically an all-boys school, but there was a bit of media around that selection at the time. I think someone even wrote an anonymous letter saying this was a bad thing for Barker cricket. You know, as a kid who's just trying to make it in the game, how did that make you feel at the time?
Yeah, it was an interesting part of my life. I think I played boys cricket all along, so I thought I wasn't doing anything different. But somebody definitely did and thought it was a disgrace. But you know what? We won the premiership that year, so it can't have been a completely bad thing. And I had a great time doing it. So for the sake of my career, I actually really enjoyed it, and I think I learned a lot. So for me personally, it was great. And for the school to have a trophy in the cabinet, then it must have been not too bad.
Bit of a personal connection here. My brother, Rob Edwards, was actually, I think, in the same year as you, and he played for Knox Grammar. And in a news article many years ago, you outed him for bouncing you in a school game, and he still talks about it. If you mind, I'll just read quickly from this article. So this is you as a 19-year-old talking to the media. I remember playing Knox Grammar and being bounced by Rob Edwards, who is now in the state underage system. I got hit, but I learned to come back from that. It's something that you wouldn't experience in the women's game. You see Aussie guys getting hit all the time, and they just keep going. It taught me to do that. So what are your thoughts on that? You know, did my brother actually incentivise you to go and make it and play for Australia? Am I responsible for that in some weird, tenuous way?
That was the very PC version. I can give you the non-PC version where he seemed in it hitting straight the boob. So,
was he horrified? Like, what was his reaction? I mean, he's not
a cricket ball, right?
He's a nice guy. I can attest to that. But did he kind of stare down after that? What was his kind of reaction?
No, I think he had a short leg in as well, and I think everyone was just a little bit shocked by what had just occurred. While I was sort of a little bit hurt, but no, I think they sort of. Every time I've played boys cricket, they sort of, you know, they want to bowl full and I like to cover drive. So they start bringing their length back a little bit. And then as soon as it's a bouncer, they definitely mean it, but they apologise straight after it. And I was like, why apologise? You definitely meant that. Like, that's not an accident. So, but I do love the pull shot, so I can credit Rob for that thing.
What I wouldn't have given, Alyssa, for a bowler-to-bowl bouncer to me, then apologise immediately after it happened.
yeah, that's right, yeah.
Obviously as well, I mean, there are two Knox boys, in this podcast, so the only thing we find disgraceful in this is that that Barker won the CIS Championship and Knox, and that's the only thing taking away.
A bit more private school chat would be good, actually.
Let's talk about North Shoreline.
Yeah. Alyssa, I want to ask you, obviously, we should actually speak about the biggest thing that's happened in Australian cricket in the last week or so, rather than talk about private schools, but... you guys obviously just win your third T20 championship in four attempts, and that last game, the final against England, must have been hugely satisfying. But I just want to know, does it get a little bit spicy on the field between Australia and England, like it would in the men's cricket, or is it actually quite sort of tame compared to some of the exchanges that we've seen on the field over the years?
Yeah, it's changed a little bit in the last few years, I think, with the WBBL and obviously the KSL in England coming in. A lot of players are tending to play with one another a little bit more and become a bit more friendly. But in saying that, I think the rivalry that we've got with England is, the biggest one we've got. We love beating them. We obviously play the Ashes every couple of years, and they're always really spicy. So I think potentially... for everyone becoming mates with all these players around the world, it actually makes it a bit more spicy, because I think you just get more fired up when you're playing your mates and you want to beat them more than just the random that you come up against. So they tend to be pretty fiery, but it's exactly how I love to play the game, so it's me.
Alyssa, I want to talk about your keeping a little bit. I was minded to read back on a comment from friend of the show, Ed Cowan, last year saying, he was talking about you. He said, she's a gun. She's probably the second or third best keeper in Australia, no doubt, male or female. We're talking about pure skill, beautiful hands, unbelievable up to the stumps, can bat, a ripping cricketer, but specifically with the gloves on, she's an absolute gun. Where is your keeping at the moment? Are you happy with where you are? Can you give us a bit of insight into sort of how much work you put into it and where you think you actually would rank, male or female, as far as keepers go across the world?
I've got no idea about ranking, so don't ask me that. I'll skip over that one. But, I think keeping's been such a big part of my game for so long. And, when I was playing for Australia not that long ago, I was sort of batting seven or eight down the order, and I had to really contribute to the team with my gloves. So that was where I really tried to make an impact. And it's not going in that great at the moment, I must be honest. But, it takes a lot of hard work. We travel so much now. touring all over the place, and it's about finding the right time and the right people to work with. And, you know, we don't have a keeping coach in our Aussie group anymore, which is hard, especially when you're on tour for sort of 6, 7, 8 weeks to try and, you know, get someone to help you to keep improving while you're on tour. It's not easy, but, yeah, look, it takes a lot of hard work, a lot of T20 cricket, so it means you're spending a lot of time up to the stumps, and it makes, you know, that one... that one opportunity even more crucial, whether it be a catch or a stumping. So, you know, I feel like if I'm doing my job behind the stumps, it's doing justice for the bowlers because they do a really good job.
I mean, one area of your game that is just coming on in leaps and bounds and, you know, you're just absolutely dominating in is the batting side of things. You've you annihilated that World T20 comp. You know, you, even though your lower score is in the final, you managed to just destroy Shrubsole in that second or third over and kind of put Australia on the path to victory. I mean, like, how has your batting come along? Is it through coaches at that level? You know, do you think you can go to another level from here?
Yeah, I think I can always improve. I think I can definitely go there. I think I can bat for longer periods and make more runs. But in saying that, I'm sort of doing my job at the moment, and that's to sort of make an impact and sort of put the game on our side early on. And I think I'm really enjoying that role. I think nothing's really changed too much with my batting. I think it's just a bit of a confidence thing. I'm walking out there with a bit more confidence and trusting what I can do with the bat and the areas that I want to score, and it seems to be paying off at the moment, so hopefully I can keep doing that. But I'd love to bat a little bit longer and, you know, get a couple of triple figure scores and make sure that the game's well within our reach.
Alyssa, what we really want to know is, like, can you just tell us about the circuit after winning the World Cup? I mean, you're in the West Indies, you know, you've just had a bumper tournament. I mean, you know, is Rihanna around? You know, is Chris Gayle, Usain Bolt? Well, he's in the Central Coast at the moment, so probably not him. But, I mean, like, can you tell us about the celebrations, the wild celebrations, and spare no detail?
Because we tried to get you last week, and then the comms person said, no, you guys are in transit, which I think is a euphemism for circuit.
Yeah. Oh, it took 4 days to get home, and coaching staff use that as a circuit, that is for sure. But I think we're actually pretty tame as a women's group. I've been a part of Mitch's World Cup win here in Australia in 2015, and Christ almighty, that was a long week. From our point of view, we're really tame. I think the girls the game only finished at like 11 o'clock, and we left the ground about 1 o'clock and just got back to the hotel, and we're staying in an all-inclusive resort, so they left the bar open for us, and I think a few of the girls were floating around the Caribbean about 5:30 in the morning on a giant blow-up donut. So it was pretty fun, and we celebrated well, as we should. But realistically, we came straight back to a tournament here, so we couldn't go too hard.
Of course, yeah.
Obviously, the WBBL started last week. Alyssa, you guys had a shock loss to the Melbourne Stars. Lizelle Lee, 100 off about 50 rocks. You and Elise started really well with that opening partnership there. You got the Sydney Derby this weekend. Can we expect some fireworks there?
Yeah, I think so. I think looks like Harmanpreet might be back. So there you go.
Well, you've laid down the gauntlet already now.
Yeah.
I'll blame you guys if something happens. I think it's we probably just didn't turn up on Saturday against the Stars. Obviously, Lizelle played a pretty unbelievable innings. I don't think she really missed anything with the bat. So, but we'll have to bounce back pretty quickly. Traditionally, the Sixers haven't started too well in the tournament, so we'll be looking to rectify that. But the Derby is the game that we all want to play in. It's as soon as the WNCL is over and the WBBL starts, the line's drawn and the banner begins, so I'm looking forward to getting out there. It's always a great game. I think traditionally we've gone one all each season in the Derby, so hopefully we can get a win on our home turf at North Sydney.
Brilliant. We're into the throwdown section now, Elise, so apologies in advance for all of the questions that will follow. But, you know, that's just the way we do it. Let me kick it off. Elise, now that our men have bottled it completely, how difficult is it to solely carry the crushing weight of our nation's need to win at all times?
If I'm being brutally honest, we've been doing it for years, so we're kind of used to it.
Alyssa, at the family Christmas lunch this year, how many glasses of wine will it take before Heels starts banging on about how good it was keeping the Warnie in his prime?
Two. No, to be fair, there's not a lot of cricket chat, so, and mind you, I never have a family Christmas, so I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, a couple of bottles deep and there'll be a few bouncers thrown down.
Right. So Ian Healy not invited to your Christmas lunch.
Alyssa, you and Mitchell, you might already know this, but you are one of only three dual international cricketers in history to be married. But how soon do you think it'll be that there's a fourth member of that little group there when Marcus Stoinis marries himself?
I think that is very close to happening after watching the last few weeks of international cricket, but no, he's a good fella.
Elise, this is sort of we've got a lot of personal questions here. This is pertinent to me specifically because I've had this problem, but like, at what stage in your cricket career were you able to Google Alyssa Healy cricket and feel confident that pictures of you, not Ian, would show up? Like, I've had this problem since Elise burst onto the scene.
Probably around that school scandal when I was on the front page next to Osama bin Laden.
That's definitely going to be the shot of the podcast. We've got to find that picture.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a giant headline about Osama bin Laden. There was me in my Barker school uniform with two mates. So it's one of my finest moments.
Did you hit runs on 9/11? It's a hot day that day, I remember. Alyssa, what's it like to be in a relationship where you can talk about cricket to your partner without them wanting to immediately leave the room?
You know what's funny? He would leave the room if I start talking about cricket. So, yeah, we're probably like every average couple, except I'm the one talking about cricket.
How satisfying was it to miss one game in the recent World T20 against India and see Australia lose and then to be rolled without you?
Look, I was sitting pretty groggily in the change room trying to get my eyes right so that I could go out and bat. But this isn't going to be as funny, but I think everyone needs to lose at some stage in that tournament, so it was a perfect time to do it.
It was a loss we had to have.
A loss we had to have.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Correct.
Well, Alyssa, thank you very much for joining us for the interview this week, and thanks for even going all the way down the rabbit hole to 9/11 jokes, which I think is territory we've never mined before. So we appreciate that you've managed to go there with us as well. All the best for the upcoming WBBL and all the international cricket. Congrats on the success, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, guys.
Our friends at Budgie Smuggler have supported us since day one, and in turn, we're doing the same. Back to them. This week, we're talking about couples smuggling. It's a thing. I don't know if you follow Budgie Smuggler online, boys, but they often have pictures of couples who smuggle together. I'm not sure what the kind of tagline is. If you smuggle together, you insert the finish of that.
You stay together for a long and lasting relationship.
Indeed, and fulfilling relationship.
You buy an
as
investment
well.
Property, then negative gear that property.
You difficult at the moment because of lending practices by the banks through the Royal Commission.
Also, the Labor Party's probably going to get in, scrap negative gearing.
Yeah.
This is all part of Budgie Smuggler's campaign. Yeah.
Well, that's right. So with all that in mind, we are here to talk about couples smuggling. So, you know, if you are in a couple, which would, you know, how many people who listen to the Craig Reader podcast would be in an actual
Six.
Long and lasting relationship?
Six people.
That's nice of us to say. We're getting very friendly about our audience. They do couple smuggles, smugglers and smugglets, they call it. You can get the same design, you can get custom designs. Christmas is obviously around the corner.
When you go down to the Balmoral Beach and you want to show off your glistening bronzed body with your partner, you can do that in a set of budgies.
But yeah, that's the Budgie Smuggler guys have put together some couples smugglers. You know, we're encouraging you to go and get them if you don't want to wear the retro jerseys from 1993, the lightning bolts, etc. Get them maybe a more tasteful design.
His and hers, smuggler and smuggettes.
Indeed, that's budgiesmuggler.com.au.
All right, lads, that time again. Hashtag AskTGC. Just before we wrap up another show. Excellent to have Alyssa and Jared Whateley on the show this week. Just before we get into that, lads, obviously we're trying to break the summer by doing as much work as possible.
Overexposure.
Some would say that. Others would say we're just working really hard to create some fun stuff, you know, to each their own. We are doing a live show. Our very first one is kick off in Adelaide, the first day of the test match, the first night of the test match in Adelaide. We're going to be in your city. And you know what? All we want is for you guys just to come along because it's going to be an absolutely wild ride. A special guest is Ed Cowan for the first live show. We have been tipped off there'll be more than one international, at least in the audience. And
ipso facto, that person will definitely be on stage, if not ridiculed in front of a large group of people. At the Rhino Room in Adelaide. I mean, it's fairly obvious how you go and get tickets if you've ever used the internet before.
Go to Google and type in the Grade Cricketer Live Show Adelaide and just bloody well do it.
Trust
just
the algorithm.
Get your credit card ready. It's $40 and that's good. It's a good price.
Yeah.
It's a good price.
I think so.
I don't know think about it. Like, what are we
I'm
worth?
Not thinking of the way he delivered that, what not a, the truth of that worth? Statement.
And we're worth $40.
Anyway, it's going to be a huge night. It's the first night of the test match. Bring a mate along, play the ultimate rain card. It's going to be wild. And just get around us. Just get around us in a circle.
Literally in a circle.
That's actually chant, the setup.
Lads in a circle.
And heaps of boys.
And obviously, I mean, we've already said it 15 times, but the first Channel 7 show is out. We haven't done it yet, but it's probably going to be good. Who knows?
Hope you liked it.
Who knows if it's not? All
right. Hope you liked it.
Let's get onto the hashtag AskTGC, is where Declan Waddington kicks us off, and he says, "That great cricketer, why is your new TV show scheduled for 5:30 p.m. on a Tuesday evening? Literally every cricket club in the country, Park and Grade, will be training because they have nothing better to do with their sad, pathetic lives. Seven's attempt to get rid of you?"
This is one of those classic, like, bloke questions where it's actually a backhanded compliment, but it still needs to be wrapped up in a whole host of criticisms. So Seven's attempt to get rid of you. Well, of course, yeah, they'd give us TV show to get rid of us. Look, we're sorry that we couldn't fit in the time slot for the TV show at exactly the time that suited every single person. We don't kind of have the ear of Kerry Stokes from Seven West Media just yet to do the program scheduling. We've just been put on at that particular time. And it's an on-demand show really anyway, so it's not really intended to be watched live that much. If you want to watch it live, great. If you want to watch it live, great.
When Channel 7 came to us and they said, "Lads, do you want a show?" And we thought, And then they said, we'll let you choose any time that you want to put it on. That's what they said to us. They said, "Well, first of all, they go, here's a bag of cash." And they go, "Well, you're going to have to triple it for a start. There's three of us." And they go, "Okay." It's mental, but it's a media game. It's the easiest thing in the world. Anyway, so we all bought Harbourside properties. Then after that, we thought, now what time should we put this television show on? Let's put it on 4:30 on a Tuesday afternoon.
Go up against Totally Wild.
It's on demand. You can watch it whenever you want. Don't stress out. Declan. All right. Daniel Friend says, "When you're a top order batsman of Finnish red ink, do you have the right to tell every female on the circuit that your name is Alan Robert Border, even though they don't understand and think you're a rare unit for stating your middle name? Hashtag Stoinis, hard eye emojis, hashtag RTGC."
Do you have a right? I mean, legally speaking, you'd have a right, I'd say.
Every female as well that you encounter that night on the circuit.
All of them.
"My name is Alan Robert Border." You can do that if you really want to.
Yeah. They say you're a rare unit for stating your middle name, but you still have the right to do it. Hashtag Stoinis.
In Daniel's fantasy world here, they actually reply to him. So he just walked up to any female.
Do you reckon he'd even be able to get that many words out before they just turned around and left the place?
Well,
left
especially the pub. When Daniel's walked into the pub in his whites.
"I am Alan Robert Border."
With a thigh pad on the outside.
Exactly. Does he say that he, like, got a red ink from the top order beforehand, or is it just that that's presumed knowledge, or they don't know that at all? They're like, "Oh, hi, what's your name? I'm Alan Robert Border."
Well, hang on a second. There's a lot going on here with Daniel, clearly.
Yes.
Because he has hashtags.
But Alan Robert Border was a middle order batsman.
Yes. Well, he's hashtag Stoinis, but he's referenced Alan Robert Border. I mean, he's cross generation.
He's very different players as well.
Yes. Why Border?
I mean, one is the grandfather of Australian cricket.
Yes.
And the other is Alan Border.
Yes. I mean, Border did get a lot of red inks, I guess. I'm just want to query after that. It's hashtag Stoinis, who's not a top order batsman. And then there's an emoji afterwards with those hearts over the eyes. So that's, are we now talking about Stoinis' rig? There's a lot going on from, at underscore friendy.
Are we done? Have we eviscerated him yet? Are we done?
Sam Barnett says, at Grade Cricketer, "Hearing Brad Hodge revised down, I assume, Marcus Harris's average from 35.5 to 30 made me think which of the current Australian squad would have got in the turn of the century Australia A11.
Yes.
Hang on.
So who in the current Aussie side?
Yeah.
So who's in the side at the moment? Who would have made the Australia A team in the turn of the century?
From the year 2000,
Yeah.
1999 to 2001.
Very Australia few A. of them. Maybe Khawaja might have been 12th man. I think. As a bat, I mean,
we're just talking about batsmen here.
Yeah, surely we're talking about batsmen.
I would assume so.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be fair.
When we talk about Australia A, we talk about batsmen, really, don't we? Like, no one talks that much about like having fantastic bowling depth.
Paul George? No, he plays for BA.
Shane George.
Shane George is the one I'm thinking
talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Paul George.
Paul George.
I reckon Australia A bowling post 2000 would be pretty good, despite what Jimmy Anderson says about the stocks.
Kasperowitz would have been Bickle. Around there. Yeah. Bickle, yeah. Yeah. Those guys. I think the current quartet still would have something to say about
Skidiri, was he around then?
Yeah. Skidiri. A little earlier.
Right.
Joe Skidiri.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think maybe Khawaja, but other than that, right. I think most, you know, I think you're going to find it pretty hard to dislodge your Martin Loves, you know, your Clinton Perrins, your Jason Arnbergers. I don't think Arnberger ever played in Australia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Jack Plunkett writes in for the last show, the last question of the week. He says, "G'day, TGC. Got a question for the pod. I've cracked into my local A grade this year at the prime age of 24. The captain said it was because of my work in the preseason, but I think it's more because I play in a dying country league struggling for numbers. I bat 7/8, don't bowl, and have dropped both chances I've had in the field this year. Despite this shit form, career worst rig, and hamstring struggles, I haven't felt my spot in the side threatened until now. My dad, 54, has made a return to help with numbers in the thirds, but has come back in great form, like he hasn't missed a beat from his glory days in the early 90s. I fear my dad is a chance to crack into the one soon, and my neck would be first on the block. So my question is, do I continue playing cricket and trying to be the best I can at risk of being outfitted by my semi-retired father, or do I just quit now and save myself from the embarrassment? Thanks for the advice, guys." Interesting question, Jack.
Semi-retired is a nice touch.
That's really nice. Yeah.
It's a nice time.
He still works 2 days a week, so he's got plenty of time to eat Tuesday to Thursday training. He's a real threat.
I like the angle, just before you jump in there, Pez, I like the angle here that his dad still has dreams of playing ones and he will happily usurp his son in the order. Not that his dad wouldn't want to play cricket with his boy. Yeah. You know, that wouldn't be a nice thing. I'll play ones. Dad, can I get a lift to the... No, I'm ones this week. I'm ones this week. Jack and you guys are on the shit field, so...
It's a hell of a thing to contemplate, isn't it? Like, just to go, like, I'm about to get dropped for my dad. I think that would be really, really difficult. And, like, your dad just being quite happy with it, too. Mm. It's like, I'm playing well.
Exactly. Pure cuckold territory that we're in.
This
right
is
now.
Cuckold pure territory. Cuckold,
yeah.
Yes.
Because the other way around is fine. The dad can go like, well, you know, sunrise, sunset. It's time noble, for Simba to ascend the throne.
Exactly.
But it's Mufasa coming back. Simba's like, no, Mufasa is the king.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it's like.
It's exactly the same as Mufasa.
It's a Lion King analogy.
The king. So, well, that's another show done and dusted here for the Great Cricketer Podcast. The first test is mere hours away before we kick it all off and the summer begins. Sam Perry.
Next week. 50th show.
Oh, yeah?
Half century, yeah.
All right.
Start again, boys.
Start again. Double up.
Double up.
Definitely be called double up because we're not predictable.
No. Bye.